settling the land of Eretz Yisrael, the promise that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Avraham Avinu about the land of Eretz Yisrael and its unique relationship to Klal Yisrael. So I would like to say something that got my attention many years ago when I was a yeshiva bacher. One of my rebbeim had a small sefer called Yalkut Reuveni. And times waiting for minyan in between, I would peruse through the sefer, and I found some very fascinating pieces of information that was contained therein. One of them happened to be a quote of a sefer called Tuv Haaretz. And basically, maybe I'll quote from inside, so I wouldn't do it any injustice, which might be inevitable, but he has a Mesorah Hu Bi'adenu. It is a tradition that we have in our hands that at the time when Mashiach comes to bring the Galius, the Kibbutz Galius, back to from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, he's going to bring with him all the people who are Zocha to come to live in Eretz Yisrael. And he says as follows, Bozo Yom, and again, there's different sources for this. It's hard to say what the original source is, but it seems to be from the even preceding the Arizal. And he says as follows, and the very day that Mashiach will come with the Jews from the exile, they'll find in Eretz Yisrael a very scary number, 6,000, maybe 7,000 Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. And on that day, he'll start Tchias HaMeisim. And very interesting type of events, Mashiach coming to Eretz Yisrael, Tchias HaMeisim starting. And on that very same day, the walls of fire will be removed from Yerushalayim. Apparently, it could be in the scenario of Gog and Magog and destructive forces surrounding in Eretz Yisrael and battles. We're not sure exactly what he means by this. But in that very day, the base of Mikdash will be rebuilt. And one day, it must be coming down from Shemayim. He doesn't mention that here, but it will be created out of precious gems. And on the day that the people will be resurrected, they will come back to this world in a very different form that they were when they were alive. And they'll be totally spiritual creatures, with a physical body, but totally spiritual, probably akin to Adam Rishon before the sin, where he was a very pure and holy neshama and body combination. And all those thousands of Jews that are alive at that day will also be metamorphosizing into a new type of creature, which is a physically spiritual body, as the body of Adam Rishon before the sin. And also the body of Moshe Rabbeinu, who was able to survive on Har Sinai for three stints of 40 days without food, water, sleep, or whatever. So his body was definitely purified. So the bodies of the Jews living in Eretz Yisrael at that time will convert into that type of spiritual creature. The Yifrechu, Kulam Bavir Mofin Kinesharim, and they'll be able to fly. Be very special for traffic police there at that time, and everybody flying at that time. And b'chol zeh le'inei anshei kibbutz hagalus. But that will be a spectacle observed by the Jews coming from Chutz La'aretz, who are going to see, hopefully, us, flying in the skies. And I was a young, impressionable yeshiva bacher, and of course, it has to be literal, which I still have a hope that it means it'll be literal. But let me continue and tell you a couple more pieces of information.
Are we flying high as we sit here, being in Eretz Yisrael?
Yeah, okay. So, but then the people from Chutz La'aretz, Azi Kabul B'nei Kibbutz Galus Daiga B'libo V'davo Nefesh, they're going to get all depressed and upset. Yisramu El Nav Mashiach, and they're going to complain to Mashiach by saying, "Are we not Jews like them?" Why? What makes them different than us? We merited to see you, Mashiach, and we obviously merited to come to Eretz Yisrael with you. Why are we not like them? So Melech Mashiach is going to answer them. For I know them, Mefurshim should call me Dosev HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Umidik Neg Nibra. Every way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu interacts with the world is measure for measure. And he says, Osim Shehayu B'chutz Laaretz V'yishtadlu L'vo L'Eretz K'dei L'Yizkot L'Nefesh Tahara. Those people that were in Chutz Laaretz, but they made the effort and they came to Eretz Yisrael in order to purify themselves, to merit a more pure soul. And they did not worry about their financial situation and about their physical comforts. And they came by sea and by land, and even by air, I guess. And they weren't worried about being drowning in the sea or being captured by some cruel pirates. And being that they made the essence of their lives their spiritual nature and not their body and materialistic pursuits, that's why they were able to be transformed measure for measure into a new type of creature that is not weighed down by the physical and material, and that's why they're able to fly. But you, Shaisim Yecholim Lavola Be'aretz Kmosim, but you who could have come to Eretz Yisrael like they did, V'disrashalten, but you were lackadaisical and lazy, Lavo Bavur Chemdas Amon, because you were too connected to your possessions and your money, V'chashashten Lamonchem Megufchem, V'asisim Mehem Iker, V'nashchem Ruchem, V'asisim Tafel, and being that your essence in your pursuit of life was the physical material, and your spiritual was secondary. You will remain physical. And he goes and discusses how they will get a certain consolation prize of all the wealth that's hidden in the seas will wash up on the shores of Yafo, as happened with Shlomo Melech, and that will happen to kind of be a consolation prize for them, because still they were connected more to the material, and they want to get the benefits of the spiritual as well. And we're talking about good people as well. They merited to see Mashiach and to come to Eretz Yisrael with Mashiach. These are not Balei Avera. These are not people who are sinners. These are kosher Jews. But they had placed their emphasis in a different area. Now, I know that I don't know anybody who came in speaking a very fluent Hebrew with a good Israeli accent. I didn't meet all of you, but I'm assuming most of us have come from Chutz Laaretz, from South Africa, and America, Canada, right? So we have. So we did come. And I think that we have to remember that maybe if we're not Zohar to see this appearance, that hopefully we will be Zohar to see, but we have to realize that we have this our priorities straight. It's important for us to remember that, because so often the Yetzirah wants us to forget about that. And once we made the move, and all of a sudden we deal with some of the bureaucracy that we have to go through sometimes here, we kind of wonder, what am I doing here? What is this all about? And sometimes we need to be reminded of that. I one time had a student, I was teaching a seminary, and she really wanted to stay in Israel, but her parents were forcing her to go back, and so we told her she should go back. She listened to her parents. But I discussed it with the Rabbi Tchaikovsky at Neve Yerushalayim, and he told me very succinctly, he says, it's better to be a Jew in America with their heart in Eretz Yisrael than a Jew in Eretz Yisrael with their heart in America. Yeah, so I think that sometimes, you know, puts a perspective on this, and there sometimes a person wants, thank God nowadays we don't have to give up as much as they had to give up in those days. But to a certain degree, I think most of us who are here have had to make sacrifices in the material and the financial ways, and I think that you should never lose sight of that, Mesiras Nefesh, and definitely all the everybody's levels. Now, another thing is that coming to Eretz Yisrael, sometimes we expect to see things and experience things in a much different way. Part of what the Sefer Tuva Arutz, which I had the privilege of being involved in to reprint it many years ago, after seeing those quotes, I was very intrigued and I couldn't find it in any Sfarim store. So I went looking for it and I couldn't find it. And a friend of mine from South Africa actually said, why don't you go to the National Library? I'm sure they have it there and to lend. So I went there and I found a copy of Tuva Arutz. And when I found a copy of Tuva Arutz, I found a very interesting thing that it went to Daf Lamed, and all of a sudden, or Lamed Aleph, and then there was no more numbers. And I was wondering, something's missing here, and I tried following, there's a whole section missing. And I decided, you know what, this is a very special book, maybe I'll find this missing section, and subsequently I found the original print. I was able to make copies of those missing pages, and therefore I was motivated to print it up. Subsequently, I was walking by a Sfarim store that sold old Sfarim, and I saw Tuva Arutz there, and apparently when it was reprinted about 40 years ago, 45 years ago, the printer realized they missed out a section and they stuck it in afterwards. So if I had seen this, I probably wouldn't have reprinted it. So I guess it's hashgacha that it wasn't in the library's thing. So one of the things that he mentions in Tuva Arutz, which was written by a Rav, whose uncle had the same name as him, was a very famous scholar who lived in Krakow. His name was Rav Nasan Nata Shapira, the Baal Megale Amukos. That was his uncle. And his nephew, the author of Tuva Arutz, decided he wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael in the early 1600s. And then it was a lot more difficult than it was for us to come here. And he came to Eretz Yisrael. And apparently he was able to join up in the base medrash of some of the students of the Arizal. He definitely had a connection to Rav Avraham Azulai, the great-great-grandfather of the Chida, and who had manuscripts of the Arizal. And after the Chmielewski massacres in 1648 to 1650, the Jewish community in Chutzlars, who would send donations to Eretz Yisrael, to keep the society there going, stopped sending money, they had nothing left. And so, being that Rav Shapira was the quote-unquote chief Ashkenazi rabbi of Yerushalayim, he had to go to Chutzlars to raise funds. And while he did that, he stopped in a couple places and he decided to print some of the manuscripts from the Arizal, and he printed this book in about 1655 in Italy, and from there there's stories that he was even brought to England, and he appeared before Oliver Cromwell, who wanted to donate money to his whole halacha shaila, taking money from goyim. I won't go into those aspects. But one of the things he mentions here is that when a person comes to Eretz Yisrael, their neshama changes. The neshama changes. Now, quite a lot of this sefer is based on the teachings of the Arizal, and therefore has a tremendous mystical bend to it. So it's very hard to convey some of these things when I'm not, authorized, or I don't know it well enough myself to really convey it over. But there are basic levels of neshama that we have, and our neshama exists in different planes as well. And our neshama kind of gets elevated. When we are in Chutz La'aretz, we didn't have the level of neshama in the realm of called Asiya. Realm of Asiya, which is the lowest, relatively speaking, lowest realm where the spiritual neshamas exist. Even the physical world is the basis of the bottom of the world of Asiya. When you move to Eretz Yisrael, he quotes from the Arizal that you get elevated to the level of Yetzirah. And that's a whole new level. And as a matter of fact, that level is, there are even some angelic forces that reside in that realm. And so therefore, a person coming to Eretz Yisrael really gets a spiritual boost. And he goes into detail describing that when you come to Eretz Yisrael, you don't get that level until you slept a night in Eretz Yisrael, and then once you sleep at night, that's when the neshama gets the elevation. I'm sure it has something to do with when the person, and charges his neshama back to Kodesh Baruch Hu. But the evening, he gets it back supercharged in the morning with that extra level of spirituality. And as a matter of fact, I know that something that was pivotal in some people coming to Eretz Yisrael, it gives six different levels of a person dwelling in Eretz Yisrael. And he says somebody, well, five I should guess, the one that never ever enters Eretz Yisrael, his level, his neshama is limited, that his neshama cannot, elevate itself so much, and we can ask many questions of all the tzaddikim that had lived outside of Eretz Yisrael. We don't want to claim to be better than them, but they say part of what neshama has to go through, almost none of our neshamas are new neshamas. Most of our neshamas have been here many times before, and the neshama basically is split up into at least 625 subsections, according to some of the Mikubalim. And there are five levels of the Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chayi, Yechida, and each one of those gets split up five times, and it goes about at least six times mentioned, I think, in the Rashash, six levels, maybe even more. And it could be that certain tzaddikim, who never merited living in Eretz Yisrael, either had lived in Eretz Yisrael before and had a function living outside of Eretz Yisrael. So we shouldn't judge anybody who never lived in Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu, probably the highest level of neshama, and the level of Mashiach, his neshama is the neshama of Mashiach as well. And so therefore his neshama definitely cannot be dwarfed by our neshamas. Although we do have a certain schus that the neshama that our neshamas actually are able to be here.
We're all friends this morning. Is it because it's too hot? It's I'm sorry, not to open. You need to write down the air conditioner.
Maybe she got only men.
It's okay, between she or.
Maybe I'll tell stories then. So, they say that, says that another level is someone who sees Eretz Yisrael from afar, but never even actually gets to go inside Eretz Yisrael. Even the vision of Eretz Yisrael has an effect on your neshama. Then there's a third level, and that is somebody who actually entered Eretz Yisrael, but leaves, and actually leaves his world dying outside of Eretz Yisrael. That's the third level. The fourth level is somebody who is brought to Eretz Yisrael after his death. And a fifth level is somebody who came to Eretz Yisrael and stayed in Eretz Yisrael till the dying day. And then the sixth level is somebody who was born in Eretz Yisrael and never left it whatsoever. There's a one of the Rabbanim I was privileged to have a relationship with is Rav Gamliel Rabinovich. He's a Kohen. He lives. He's I think officially the Rosh Yeshiva of Shar Shamayim Yeshiva, and he gives shiurim to video shiurim I think on Thursday nights to many people in Chutz Laaretz, and he's been begged by many people to come to Chutz Laaretz, and he refuses to leave Eretz Yisrael. He wants to be, I guess, an Ola Tamima like Yitzchak Avinu, and doesn't want to leave Eretz Yisrael whatsoever. He also told me he doesn't want to give up, he's a Kohen, he doesn't want to give up a day of Duchenin, you know, which in Eretz Yisrael is one of the fringe benefits of being in Eretz Yisrael.
There's also, it's Tumas Eretz
Ha'atim. Many reasons that he doesn't want to leave. So what he says, though, he had said that some of the benefits of coming to Eretz Yisrael, if a person comes to Eretz Yisrael before their bar mitzvah, so then it could be that they are considered as if they were born in Eretz Yisrael as well, because their neshama was still pure, because nothing really of their misconduct would be considered credited to them, and so therefore they he brings a raya. I don't know exactly. He doesn't quote it, but it's a Zohar, so I'm not going to try to explain that. But he says that any mitzvahs a person does b'tara of a nikias, does impurity and cleanliness, I'd say something olam hazeh gadol b'shem tov v'niftar b'shem tov. He grows up with a good name and he dies with a good name. So that, I guess, is also considered as if they had lived their whole life in Eretz Yisrael. So I think that some of us realize that the people that come, even after our bar mitzvahs, we're like the level right before a level of somebody who's an Olah Tamimah. That's a tremendous schus that we have to be in Eretz Yisrael. I think that some of the other benefits of being in Eretz Yisrael, I don't want to be graphic, but he discusses that when a person has to leave the world, it happens differently in Eretz Yisrael than it happens in Chutz La'aretz. In Chutz La'aretz, there is what they call the angel of death, the proverbial angel of death, and it's described, again, I'm not so sure exactly how literally we're supposed to take this, but the angel of death in Chutz La'aretz comes with a sword, which is Misuk Sefes, which is, for those of you who learned Chulin, is a jagged edged sword, which is puzzle for Shrita. And therefore the type of parting of the Neshama is not as pleasant as it is in Eretz Yisrael, where the Malach that comes to Eretz Yisrael, he even brings down a riot that the Malach in Eretz Yisrael is not that Malach Amavis, it's actually the Malach Michal, which he goes to some great length that is trying to explain how it's really a kind of the Malach outside of Eretz Yisrael is a Malach Amavis, but when it comes into Eretz Yisrael, there's a connection on a higher level that is actually the Malach Michal. Now, that would take a lot of effort to try to explain that in more detail, but the Malach in Eretz Yisrael has a smooth blade, and therefore the Shechita, it's kosher, it's you're considered a korban, somebody who leaves the world here in Eretz Yisrael, and is pure, and it's a lot easier. We shouldn't have to know from Mashiach to come when we're still alive, and we shouldn't have to experience that. Now, those are just a few of the aspects. One of the things that was asked a little while before we started the shiur, comes from this week's parsha, that Kodesh Baruch Hu promised to Avram Avinu more than the Eretz Yisrael we reside in now. And of course, in the Bris Ben Bessarim, he is shown. The covenant is made with Kodesh Baruch Hu and Avram Avinu to give Avram and his descendants Eretz Yisrael. And one of the psukim explain on that day, Kodesh Baruch Hu established a covenant with Avram Avinu, telling us, "Lizarachan asati zaraz azos, to your descendants I have promised this land from the river of Mitzrayim, which may even be the Nile. Some people say it's the Dead Sea. Ad Nahar Gadol Nahar Pras, all the way to the Euphrates." And then he says, "Esakeni Vesaknizi Vesakadmoni." Those are three nations that their locale will be on the east side of the Jordan River. Syria, Jordan, I'm not sure how deep it goes. And then the Esachiti, Aprizia, Erefoim, the Amori, the Akhtani, Girjasri, the Avusi, which are the other seven nations. Now, when Klal Yisrael came to Eretz Yisrael, we only conquered those seven nations. The other three nations we never really conquered. Although there were times when the Malchus of David HaMelech or Shlomo had extended into Syria and other parts, those three realms or those three countries we did not fully ever gain control over. And that will be what will happen in the times of Mashiach. And
I think Rashi says as far as where Zaycha, because for the additional 30 Ari Miklat for those three additional nations.
Right.
But still it requires Kiyarcha Vesashem is Kulcha, because if we're going to be Zaycha, then we're
Bezat Hashem, hopefully when Mashiach comes, we'll be getting that. One of the ways of understanding this is that we have in our lives many different systems that exist. And one of the systems, and I have to inject a little bit of what I would consider semi-Kabbalistic ideas in order to put a perspective on things. And usually, like during Sefirot HaOmer, we count 7 weeks, and for this, those that say the little tefillahs afterwards, we insert a couple insertions there that talk about Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, Yisod, and Malchus. Those are names of some of the Sefirot. And the Sefirot in Kabbalistic literature is very hard to describe what it means. I wish I would truly understand what they mean, but I'll give you the vague understanding that I do have, and that would be a way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu interacts with us and reveals himself to us. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not physical in any which way, shape, or form. So therefore, the only way we could understand and relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is through his attributes. And therefore, we see Hashem through the chesed he does. We see Hashem through the gvura, the tiferes, and so on and so forth. And some people describe it as like a HaKadosh Baruch Hu is known in some of the literatures as an Orein Sof, which is not really a definition of Hashem, but it's one way Hashem tries to relate to the world as a infinite light. And that light is blinding, and we couldn't perceive that light whatsoever. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is he, as it were, refracts that light in different colors of the spectrum that we could actually see it and benefit from it. And those are refractions, as it were, of course it's all kaviyachal, would be these spheres. Now, those are the seven spheres, which are known as the lower spheres. But there are three more spheres that we really don't talk about too much, and those are the top three, which are either Keser, Chachma, and Bina, or Chachma, Bina, and Das, depending on things that are beyond me to explain differences when and where and how they are considered in different shapes. But those three correspond to those other three nations. And that could be with, I'm not sure if your name is.
Zisha.
Rav Zisha very beautifully explained that we have to be privileged to get these three lands. And that also means that we have to be able to connect the upper three spheros, which are spheros that are not representing things in a very tangible way. They're more intellectual ways of relating. And those are known as either the Keser Chachma and Bina or Chachma, Bina and Das, which in our physical bodies would be located in the brain. And the lower seven spheres would be in our extremities, the torso and in our extremities, which are things that we could kind of relate to a lot more than what's going on in the head. The only way we could relate to what's going on in the head is by being channeled through speech. That would be considered das. So what we do need is a level of das in order to connect that which is in our head to our body, and or to relate to people, and for them to be able to see or understand those more intangible or hidden things. So I like to quote a sefer. I don't think I should do it verbatim, but there's a famous story that's told about many different people, but buried in Tzfas, in one of the caves in the old cemetery, is somebody known as the Arvi Nachal. His name is Rav David Shlomo Luria, and I think he wrote a couple Sfarim, but he also wrote Sefer Levush Eshrad and on Halacha, and he explains in Parshas Shlach, in the second drasha he has, I'll try to just keep it outside. He basically explains that the Jewish people's relationship to the land of Eretz Yisrael is extremely intertwined. But he says the only way we can merit connecting to the land and retaining the land is through our complete interaction with Torah. And he says that every parcel of land in Eretz Yisrael has a unique section of the Torah connected to it. And if the Jews living in Eretz Yisrael are learning the entire Torah, at least collectively speaking, not neglecting parts of the Torah, then we are able to retain those parts and parcels of land of Eretz Yisrael. But if people are not learning it, so those sections of Torah are being weakened, as it were, and therefore our grasp and our ability to retain the land gets, chas v'shalom lo'aleinu, could be jeopardized. So I think that sometimes, you know, I would not want to really discuss Kabbalistic things that I really truly don't have a full understanding of. So it's really not right, but maybe just at least in that aspect, that might be a part of Torah that is not, might be considered neglected, unless you're in the Kabbalah club buying, you know, some popular stars in America, which, you know, but it doesn't count. They're not Jewish, or the ones that are involved. The Jewish ones, I don't really want to talk about, because I don't know them so well. Although when living in Los Angeles, I was asked to try to infiltrate the Kabbalah Center, and I don't want to talk about that. So it's definitely, I think, they're not in Eretz Yisrael, so they have a branch here, and I don't know exactly what they're doing here. But there are some people that do learn Kabbalah here, and it's very important. The people, I know the Briskers are very into Kachim, and there's other people who are learning Tahara, so Baruch Hashem, there are people who are addressing some of the more neglected areas of Torah, but I think it's important for us to get some kind of connection to it as well, and hopefully that will help us retain the ownership and presence in every part of Eretz Yisrael, because I think that that's very crucial to the Tikkun HaOlam and our function in the world. Yes.
I also got the strong impression, although I haven't been older than Abraham, that walking the land, as Hashem made Avram do, is another way of possessing the land. And there have been times when I felt that we were in danger of losing parts of the land, and I would take my family, you know, to Golan or West Bank or wherever I felt we were threatened, because walking the land is a way of possessing it.
That's a very beautiful idea. As a matter of fact, I would say that it would be important to try to study some Torah in each place you go to, because I think that would be a real, to give it more of a ability to possess the land. But what you're quoting is a Gemara that says, "Holeh Dalet Amos Ber Eretz Yisrael Zochel Olam Haba." Anybody who has mere 4 cubits in the land of Eretz Yisrael merits the Olam Haba. So, and based upon this, the Gemara in Ksubas discusses many other aspects of somebody who lives in Eretz Yisrael. Even though he might not be the biggest tzaddik, he is considered connected to Hashem. But a person who lives in Chutz La'aretz is kemi she'ein lo Eloha. It's as if he doesn't have God. And there's another lashon in the Gemara for somebody who lives in Chutz La'aretz as Ovid Avodah Zarah B'Tahara. He serves idols in purity. And in Tuva Aretz, he explains in a very beautiful way, how does that happen? You know, big tzaddikim, you know, lived in Chutz La'aretz, and we're going to call them, you know, pure meaning idol worshippers? What does that mean? So he explains that every country has a spiritual angelic force that basically is in charge of that country, and every communication between that country and the Kadosh Baruch Hu must go through that tsar, that angelic force that's in charge of that country. So therefore, even if you're davening, totally davening to Kadosh Baruch Hu, that angel kind of intercepts your prayers, and he has to deliver it to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So it's as if you're not serving idols, because you're totally talking to Kadosh Baruch Hu, but being that you're utilizing a go-between in order to connect to Kadosh Baruch Hu, it is considered, on a certain level, of course, you're not going to get punished for idol worship, but it's as if you're serving idols. Yes?
There was, and I'm terrible, I'm sorry, I don't remember who speaks, I don't remember names very well, but somebody told me that aspect of going through the Tsar depends on the level of Shekhinah that like when Yaakov went in Chutz La'aretz, Shechina went with him. So when Jews are in Chutz La'aretz, against their will, especially against their will, the Shechina does go with them. And the level of Shechina that's with them there, because there's always some level, otherwise everything's stone cold, right? But the level of Shechina, when it's high, the prayers don't go through the Sar, they go directly to Hashem as usual. And so when that level goes down, very, very low, then the Tefillahs have to go through the Sar, and then the Jews are in trouble.
Right. Okay, that's so. That's very, very good that you bring that up. That's absolutely true. But there are the situation he's talking about in our times, from the time of after the Churban Bayis Sheni, for the most part, we do not see much of a Shechina. And they say that after the first Beis HaMikdash in Galus and Paras and in Bavel, they did see the Shechina. But after the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, for the most part, the Shechina was very hard to access as in a national level. And the Maharal discusses that as being that the second Beis HaMikdash, the thing that brought the Shechina down was the unity of Klal Yisrael. And once that unity broke up, or wasn't there, in other words, Hashem granted them a certain degree of Shechina's presence, even without the full unity, and when, I guess, it reached a certain level, Kosh Baruch said, that's it. And in Chutz La'aretz, I don't think we've mustered up the unity to really bring back the Shechina. That's what we really need. Which was really crucial, at least on the national level. I'm sure there's certain tzaddikim who were able to accomplish that. The Gemara does say that kol mish yesh lo das, kilu nivne beis hamikdash b'yomav. Anybody who is on the level of das, it's as if the beis hamikdash is built in his day. And again, das is the ability to connect what we know and into our actions. In other words, that a person lives with a Kodesh Baruch Hu in their life, in their thoughts and actions, and speech, of course, that they're able to be as if there's a basic mikdash in their lives, so the Shechina is with the people like that. But those are more in individuals. So what you're saying would probably apply to individuals as opposed to as a group when you go to shul and chutz la'aretz. You know, maybe if there's a tzaddik there, you know, he can take your prayers up also without having to go through the sire of that country. But I don't know how that works. I hope that's true. For those that are still there. Once you brought up Kol Mahal Dalad Almas Beretz Yisrael, that's a Gemara Ksuvah also. I'm really going to try to shy away from anything that would be too controversial, but the idea, how does it work? He goes into details of explaining on a spiritual level how it works that a person traverses the land that gives you the connection not only to land but also Olam Haba. And Eretz Yisrael is known as Eretz Achaim, the land of the living. And that's why in the future, when Tchias HaMeisim is going to happen, it's going to happen here. That even people who are buried in Chutz La'aretz, as we all know, the famous concept that we'll have to go through the Mechilas, the underground, the rolling, the holy rollers are going to come underground to be in Eretz Yisrael. And according to some opinions, even in certain places in Eretz Yisrael, they're all going to have to roll either towards Ma'aseh Machpelah, or if you're buried in Har HaZeisim, they say that also isn't one of the entrances to Gan Eden, so you wouldn't have to roll if you're buried in Har HaZeisim. But if you're buried anyplace else, even in Eretz Yisrael, there might have to be some rolling, except for if you're buried in Tzfas, which Tzfas is one of the four holy cities of Eretz Yisrael, which she brings down a very unique idea that if somebody is buried in Tzfas, he has an extra benefit. He says that Hanif. So call dar be'ir Tzfas b'zman hazeh. Even in our times, if you live in Tzfas, begalus. Even in exile, the Mashiach's not here. Yesh lo Yisron al kol shari Eretz Yisrael. You have a certain advantage over any other cities of Eretz Yisrael. Niftar sham bavurshu makam gavoa ba'aviro zach yoser mikol shari Yisrael. Somebody passes away in the city of Tzfas, which is a very high place, and its air is very pure. It's connected to the level of Ruach, more than any other city in Eretz Yisrael. L'chein b'nehero nafsho shotas u'parachas l'maras ha'machpela l'avor l'gan Eden ha'tachton. He will not have to roll underground. He'll get a special non-halal flight from Tzfas to Maras Machpelah in order to enter the Gan Eden. That's also, I guess, there are certain parts of Eretz Yisrael have certain natural connections which are different than other parts of Eretz Yisrael. There are many some concepts written in different Svarim that also talk about looking at Eretz Yisrael as what they call a partsuf. Now, in Kabbalistic terms, a partsuf means one thing, but they wanted to make it mean something else. Some people describe the relationship to the four main holy cities in Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't talk about this in here, but I may as well just throw in some extras, that the four Eretz Yisraels correspond to what they call in the mystical literature as the Arba Yesodos, the four fundamental elements, thank you, of the world, and that's known as the fire, wind, earth and water, or water and earth, and of course Hebron, we'll call earth, that's the Maras Machpelah, it was brought from Ephron, Achiti, Ephron, Afer, and then Yerushalayim, which was David Mel purchased from Uriah. I'm sorry? Yevusi, right? And just like Yerushalayim was destroyed with fire, would be rebuilt with fire, the Karbonos, fire comes down from Shemayim and Yerushalayim, so that's corresponding to Eish. Tiberi, of course, is water. And of course, according to Arizal and Sharon Gilgulim, I think, and he says that the Be'er Shel Miriam is located in Tiberi, and some people have shown there's certain steps and columns in the ocean, in the Kinneret, which you can, if you go there, you can merit the Be'er Shel Miriam. The Hasidim have a minhag that in certain wells on Motzei Shabbos, the Be'er Miriam appears in these wells, and if you drink from those wells, you get tremendous bracha. But many stories are told about that. But we'll stick with the one in Eretz Yisrael, it's a little nicer. And then in Tzfas. Tzfas corresponds to Ruach, and hence that's the very nature of Tzfas would be to give you that ability to fly, I guess. It doesn't say about that we spoke about at the beginning, about when Mashiach comes seeing the Yidden flying over there, but that would be everywhere in Israel, so get that level. Now, there are many, many ideas that I would like to touch upon still. Maybe what I'll do is, might be worthwhile to maybe just take some questions now and see. I know that I think we have 10 minutes left. I don't know if that's a fair amount of time, or
no, that's fine. You can end whenever you want.
Okay. I mean, if anybody has any questions, not to take questions. Otherwise, I can continue with some other stuff. Continue. Okay. All right. Eretz Yisrael also has a special connection to the fruits of Eretz Yisrael. Fruits of Eretz Yisrael, we know, the Gemara also in Tuvos there talks about how the fruits of Eretz Yisrael were, even in the times of the Tanaim, they describe as one Tana had a grape in the corner of his house and he attached a little spigot to it and he had his year's supply of wine from the grape. Now, again, I guess when we see the spies walking with the eshkol, the cluster of grapes, I guess that's where they got grapefruit. Such, you know, where they got the word grapefruit from. But the fruits were definitely different size then, and there's a special bracha in the fruit. Now, after a certain stage of time, the fruits lost that, and when the Jews were exiled again, the bracha was kind of filtered out, and there was no bracha, and at least in the physical sense, but in the spiritual sense, we still have a bracha in the fruits of Eretz Yisrael. First of all, we see halachically that the seven fruits are five fruits that Eretz Yisrael is known for, has a unique bracha to it, and it's very important for us. Even if you eat those fruits that are grown in Chutz Laaretz, being that they're the fruits that Eretz Yisrael are known for, they are also given special brachas. But there is an extra addition if you, let's say, al gafna at the end, as opposed to. So there's always a distinction of Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz. The Arizal does mention that it will apply to some of the brachas we make when we make Barech Aleinu in Shmona Esrei. And we say, Baruch Aleinu Hashem Elokeinu Asher Shamar Azaz was Kol Minei Tvuota L'Tova, and all its bounty and goodness. V'tein Bracha Al Pnei Adamav Sabeinu M'Tuva, and let us be satiated with its goodness. And the Arizal basically brings down that food that is grown in Eretz Yisrael inherently has goodness in it. And that bracha is especially necessary for food that is made in Chutz Laaretz. And the food made in Chutz Laaretz has a combination of good and not good in it. And hence, when we make v'sabeinu mituva, we have to have in mind, if you're in Chutz Laaretz, or if you're eating your Cheerios, which come from Chutz Laaretz, or whatever food that you have not been able to wean yourself from, you know, from Chutz Laaretz.
Most of the bread in Israel is made with U.S. wheat.
That's why we eat matzah, right? all year round. There are some places that have homegrown things, but I guess that we still need to make the bracha even here, I guess.
A commercial bakery in Berman's and Angels is open. U.S. wheat.
Except for the sprouted wheat in that also.
Sprouted wheat's probably, sprouted wheat has a little bit of flour in it, so I don't know where the flour came from. Or sprouting's obviously.
Well, it could be seeds from Chutz Laaretz also.
But just, virtually all of it's Chutz Laaretz wheat.
Just being made here, I guess, doesn't do enough, because if it's grown in Chutz Laaretz, so then it does retain some of that negative force, so I guess we still have to have that kavana even on the foods we eat here. So that's when we say in the Shemona Esrei, we say Baruch Aleinu Hashem Elokeinu, and towards the end we say V'sabeinu Mituva, let us be satisfied with its goodness, and as opposed to anything that's not so good that may be mixed in there. So we're asking that we shouldn't have any negative influence from the food that is from Chutz Laaretz. That could have a negative, probably physical effect as well. If you're macrobiotics, that the theory of macrobiotics is you only eat food that's in season and locally grown, because that's what is meant for your body. Hashem, when he, I don't know if they take God into account in macrobiotics, but he does mention here also towards the beginning how every country is unique for the inhabitants of that country. A lot of people, the evolutionists, think that the people in Alaska, their skin is a lot thicker because they adapted to, the cold. So the Torah teaches us, no, that Hashem created those type of people to live in those type of places, and he gave them that, to begin with. He does mention here a very famous idea that the Tsar of every country has the ability to affect the formation of people born in that country. Now, I'm not 100% sure if that applies to Jews. It definitely applies to non-Jews. But I do have a friend, maybe Revitson will remember, the Danzer family. So they lived in China for a little while, and they had a son who was born in China, a beautiful boy, but a unique characteristic of this boy is his eyes look Oriental, and it's his other brothers look totally American, or Jewish, and this son who was born there, the oldest son. And then one of their sons lives here in Eretz Yisrael. Which is interesting. I have to find where that is. They talk about in Tuva Arts. He discusses that even if you do not live in Eretz Yisrael, but you have somebody in Eretz Yisrael who would either have to sit Shiva for you, or you'd have to sit Shiva for them. So you get a tremendous benefit, even if you're not in Eretz Yisrael, but you're connected to somebody who lives in Eretz Yisrael. You give them tremendous benefits in the spiritual level, at least for the future, to be able to come here and settle here as well. So it's some major things. So, you know, you're worried about your family, what is it's going to be with them if they don't come here. Does that Hashem, you know, hopefully
they'll be
so good.
Does that mean that we should adopt our grandchildren?
Well, maybe.
So we don't should children.
Yeah, I guess, but hopefully your children, hopefully the grandchildren will make it, you know. There's still time, you know, a few more minutes, you know, until Mashiach comes, you know. The flights, might be a little crowded, but it's amazing that I came right before Sukkot to Eretz Yisrael, and I was able to get on a flight. I was shocked that I was able to do that. I think the financial situation in the world is making it a little bit more difficult for people to come. But I think at the same time, maybe I shouldn't be talking about these things, but maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to wake up the whole world to say, you know, maybe financial pursuits are not the ikur in one's life, and getting them used to not having all the comforts and luxuries they're used to, and maybe they'll make it an easier transition for them to come here.
Hopefully. I'm sure your flight was packed with loads.
No, there are a couple empty seats here and there. I came from Los Angeles. I'll officially call it here, but if anybody has any questions, I got time. If anybody has anything to ask.
Fruits from a lot or any point south from wherever. Yeah.
Anywhere from the Arava, even the Arava itself and south, I think it's a little bit below Beersheba. I don't know how much exactly below Beersheba. A lot of peppers and even bell peppers, which it wouldn't be a but just as far as the, I think a more common problem of Dafna is. Quite often you'll find post-Shemitah, or during Shemitah and post-Shemitah, even for a couple of years, and even now I saw, which is really the third year after Shemitah, that I saw wine, or grape wine and grape juice that is coming from Spain. And you have to look for it in the, you know, somewhere near the Badats or whatever hechsher you use. If it's a good hechsher, we'll usually say, these little Switzerland. And so therefore, people are like, oh, I'll gaff now. Wait, take a look before you. Especially now that the market's been flooded with Kedem, Geula, whatever that wine is, grape juice, you know. We've got good stuff here, I don't know. But sometimes, there are many people who actually prefer to.
The Mekadesh, that for example, the produce that was grown in Aza, at some point, I read there was initially by Rishon, the produce from that area was considered Eretz Israel.
That was only temporary.
They were Mekadesh that area of the land, but in the second bite, they decided not to do that so that they could use that produce during Shemitah. So the status of produce from Gaza, when we had Pushkatim versus Shaila.
The same thing with Amon Moab on the east side of the Jordan as well. That I guess there is sometimes in Shemitah your produce that comes from there. So that also, the Mora talks about that was left aside to be able to benefit from it during Shemitah.
Can you thank you very much.
Good.
I'm going to take my kids.
I'm going to take my kids.
You'll be continuing next week, Mr. Hashem.
It's
up to everybody, actually. The rabbi is saying it's up to everybody.
This one, I was about 5 minutes ago, about 11 years ago. This one's not available. This one is. Somebody subsequently went home and heard it and did a lot of research.
Yeah.